Matthew 10, verse 28. So Matthew 10, verse 28, it says, "And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul. But rather fear him that is able to destroy both the soul and body in hell." Verse 29 says, "And are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows." So when you imagine a God, or you think of a God that has the hairs on our head numbered, knows enough about us and cares enough about us to know that detail about us, you gotta really think about He created everything. Everything. Have you guys ever looked at the pictures that come from the Hubble telescope in the deep field in space? If you haven't seen it, get on your Google machine tonight and just Google Hubble, H-U-B-B-L-E, deep field. What's going to come up are these little bitty circles, thousands of little bitty circles on this picture. And it's as far as you can see deep into that picture. And you go, well, wow, that's a lot of stars. But if you read what's associated with that picture, you're going to learn that those are not stars, those are galaxies. And those galaxies go on forever, as far as we can see, galaxy after galaxy after galaxy. I didn't say solar systems, I said galaxies. We are in a galaxy, the Milky Way. And it probably has multiple solar systems in it that we can't see. But beyond our galaxies, there's thousands upon thousands of galaxies. God created every bit of that. And yet He chose to take the form of a man, humble Himself as a child, take the form of a man and come down here on this earth. And though He didn't have to, though He had options, though He had choices, He chose to die for us so that we would have a way to get to Him. Now, we talk about that like it's a story, but it actually happened. He actually became a vulnerable person and yielded His life so that we would have a way to get to Him. It boggles my mind, because when I pray, I think I'm reaching to the Messiah, the great I Am that created all, but I'm also talking to a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. Usually when something is big and great, you don't have access to it. If you believe you have access to people in high positions, travel to Washington, D.C., go up to that iron fence and try to climb over and go shake the president's hand. Just take a shot at it and see how many spider monkeys come out of the trees to stop you. It's tempting, though, because the White House is right there and the fence is just right here. And you think, well, I could probably get there. I bet you couldn't. But God is much bigger than our president and all the presidents put together. Yet He offers Himself and says we have access to Him. God has a hand. That hand has. And God has a direction for our lives. There was a great race that was going on years ago, and these different teams were competing against one another. They were racing through a jungle. And it was one of those shows where the teams can't see each other and they're trying to get to the finish line. But there was this one British team that had found themselves in a place where they were 24 hours ahead of everyone else. Okay, it was the middle of the night, and they got to a place to where they don't know that they're 24 hours ahead of everyone else. They just know they're running their race. And they get to a place to where just a few feet of jungle, and then they're in a clearing, and that's the finish line. They had lost their direction. They're standing there trying to figure out what they should do. they chose the wrong direction and went deeper into the jungle and missed the finish line by just a few feet. They were also just a few minutes from daylight when they made that decision. Had they waited just a little while for just a little bit of light, they would have known where they were and they would have gone to the finish where they were supposed to be victorious. Instead, they got off deep in the jungle and ended up losing the race. Sometimes in our life, we get in situations where we're not really sure where we are, but if we can wait for just a little bit of light, if we can just stop and settle down and wait for a little bit of light from God, we can get to that place that He would have us go. Oftentimes we work really hard to get to a place, and we don't slow down long enough to get direction. Stephen Covey tells a story in one of his books about two crews that are building a road. And one crew starts on one end, and they're miles and miles apart. One starts on the other end, and they're supposed to build this road and meet in the middle. And he said, each of these teams are working efficiently. This is a business book, and they're working very efficiently, and in record time, they come together and miss the roads, miss the connection by hundreds of feet. And he says, you know, it doesn't do any good if we're working and putting a lot of energy in, and we're making progress, but we're going in the wrong place, and we're ending up in the wrong place. It'll do us a lot of good to check with God along the way, because God has. It's a hand that has. God has the answers. And if we can get ourselves in a position where we're yoked, in that yoke that God would have us in. Y'all ever seen a yoke? I haven't seen many except for hanging up on the wall at Cracker Barrel. But some of y'all might have actually experienced a yoke or seen one. Brother Lee, did you ever see a yoke? You strike me as the type of fellow that might know something about it. Been in one, okay. It probably wasn't a yoke, brother, but whatever. I don't know what it could have been. But. So if you tie two oxen together, and they're in this yoke and they're pulling in a direction, then they can get a lot done. If you take one ox and you take a little heifer cow, what direction is the wagon going to go or the plow going to go? It's going to go in the direction of the ox, and it doesn't matter. How much the smaller beast fights, they're going to wear themselves out, and they're not going to change the direction of that yoke. This is the same with us and God. God has a direction for our life. God has a path that He wants us on. And if we'll get in that yoke, and we'll go in that path, and He'll pull us in that direction, then our burdens are easy. Our load is light. Because that way is being paved for us. That the work is being done for us. But what we like to do is we like to get in that yoke because we're Christians. And we want to sign up for God's direction, but we want to fight the entire time. And we want to pull this way and that way and back that way. And the whole time, God's saying, well, this is the plan. This is where we're headed. It's interesting. It's interesting that you're flailing and you're bleeding and you're fighting and you're sweating and you're working. That's all interesting, but this is where we got to go. You're just causing yourself pain. You're causing yourself anguish. Who are you mad at? Who are you mad at? You're not supposed to be going that direction anyway. This is your direction. And if we can figure out what that direction is for us, and if we can rest in God, then we can go with ease. And we can succeed in the direction God would have us be. This is very easy to do in the ministry. Because hard work in the ministry is admirable, right? If we can show that we're working hard in the ministry, then we must be doing right. Well, what if we're working in the wrong direction? What if we're trying to play in a role that God never intended for us? You know, the church is made up of many bodies. What if we're an arm and we're trying to act like a leg? It just won't work. It's not the way it's built. And oftentimes we try to work in roles that we're just not built for. And God would have us try to figure out what role that we should be in. And God would have us be in the right place, doing the right work. Understanding our purpose, and when we're in our purpose, God is in it. You ever been fighting for something that you just kind of knew deep down God wasn't supporting, and you're working toward it. I've done it. I've done it for years. I've chosen paths that really fought me. I'm probably the only one. I don't know. You know, if we can get in the place that God would have us, He's there to open those doors for us. And the energy that we've got to exert in that situation is much lower. And we can just, if we can just trust. Now, Brother Ken and I were talking the other day. There's a such thing as knowing. You know, just there's a knowing that God can give us. There's a knowing that God can put on our heart. And if we've got, and if God has given us something that we just know we're supposed to do, and we can work in that direction, that doesn't mean doubt won't slip in. But if we can just know that God has us moving in that direction and keep moving, God will just, He'll just knock the doors open. He'll just make it work and make it happen. And when it doesn't look like it's going to come together, all of a sudden it'll come together. If you need something that obviously is someone else's possession, and you don't know how you're going to get it to accomplish what God has for you, the doorbell will ring and somebody will hand it to you. And that's the way God works. He opens those doors for us. And I'm not talking prosperity here, because I'm not saying that it's easy, but I'm saying that if God has that plan for us, He will make it happen on our behalf. I would ask you to consider Samuel 16 when Samuel anoints David as king. David was tending the sheep. That's what it was his job. He was a young boy and he was tending the sheep. That was his duty. At that moment in time, that was his duty. That's what he was supposed to be doing. So he was out there minding his own business, tending the sheep. He wasn't seeking a promotion. He wasn't looking for fame. He wasn't looking for anything for himself. He was just in his spot doing what he was supposed to do for his father. So God sent Samuel down to David's house, and he was there to Samuel was there to pick a king and anoint a king, because God told him to go to that house and do a sacrifice as a cover. And while you're there, I'm gonna present to you a king, and you're gonna anoint him. So Samuel went through all the brothers, and God was speaking to him. He said, "Yeah, this one looks handsome, and he looks tall, and he looks like king material, but I haven't chosen him." God said, "I haven't chosen him, and I haven't chosen him, and I haven't chosen him." So then he asked, "Well, are there any other sons?" They sent for David. I might have said Daniel earlier. They sent for David and pulled David out of the field. And that was the choice. So David, at that point, was anointed king. He had oil poured on him. And he's now, from God's man, who the same God's man that chose Saul and anointed the current king, has just, by God's power, anointed the new king. But David didn't just go step up and take the throne, did he? Because it wasn't his time. Samuel went away, so how's David going to go from a sheep herder tending the sheep to now a king? Well, okay, so something's got to happen here. Is it on David to figure that out? Is David now supposed to go figure out, okay, all right, I've got this oil on me, and the God's man told me I'm king, so I got to go figure out how to dethrone the king, because that's my purpose and that's my destiny. I got to go defeat an army, probably, single-handedly. I got to go convince all the governors and probably take the king's life and the life of his family. And I got to go work all this out because that's my purpose. And I know it in my heart. Well, he may have known it in his heart, but there's no way he's going to go defeat and dethrone a king. So God does something. God puts an uneasy spirit on Saul. And Saul was troubled, and Saul couldn't sleep, and Saul couldn't think, and Saul felt like God had departed from him, and he was tortured. He was tortured inside, and God put that spirit on him. Well, it turns out that if music was played for Saul, that he could calm down, he could rest. Well, guess who was the only person that knew the song or knew the music that could be played for Saul? It was David. Somebody just happened to know of a shepherd out in the field that played beautiful music, and they just bet that would take care of Saul's problem. And guess what? It did. It did. And when David got there with Saul, Saul said, "Wow, there's something special about you. You've got God's favor on you. And just like Patrick talked about the other night, you got God's favor on you. And this is good to me. And I need you to be my armor bearer." Because an armor bearer stayed with the king. Now, wherever the king went, the armor bearer went. And also, David was there at the quiet times. He was there at the busy times, and he was there at the quiet times, because the quiet times is when you play the music so that Saul could rest. So somehow God took someone tending from the sheep, anointed him, blessed him, and put him right in the chambers with the king so that David, and I didn't see this as many times as I've read this passage. I didn't see this until the other day. God put David right under the king, and David was overhearing all the governance. He was overhearing all the problems. He was overhearing all the situations that were brought before him. He was getting situational awareness about all the nations around him, all the people who were trying to hurt him. He was learning how he was an apprentice to being a king before he was going to take the throne. Yeah, David did some pretty cool things as a warrior and as a fighter, but there's more to being a king than just knocking heads. And there's more to being a leader than that. So David was right there learning from Saul until it was his time to take that place. Now, God can work some stuff out. In our lives, He does the same thing. He works things out. He makes a path to go before us. And a lot of times we're in situations we don't fully understand. God anointed me to be king, and here I am playing music and carrying armor. There is one thing about David, though. Even when he got crossed up with Saul, even when he got crossed up and Saul was out to kill him because he saw him as a threat, David had the opportunity to take Saul out. And at this point, he was already established, and he probably could have taken Saul out and stepped right into the throne because everyone was recognizing him as great. God wasn't in that. So David didn't do it. David waited, and he held back, and he kept himself pure, and he kept himself righteous, and he stayed in a place that God could bless him. If he'd have made that choice, he might have been king, but he might have been the wrong kind of king. God put that in him and put that patience in him so that he could create the king that could bring him honor. There's a hand that has. God has had a kingdom. He had a young shepherd. He took the kingdom and he handed it to the young shepherd and created a king. There's a hand that has. That's the same God that we serve today. There's a hand that heals. If you will turn to John chapter 5. In John chapter 5, we find a lame man laying by the pool. After, verse 1, after this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there sat at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. See, this is where they washed the sheep before they were to be sacrificed. In verse 3, it says, in these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. So there were a lot of people that needed some help. They were waiting for the water to move. They were waiting for a movement of God. I would say here tonight, in here on Sunday morning when this place is packed, there are a lot of people. And a lot of people are waiting on a movement for God. And a lot of people that need help. And you know, you may be able to see these folks that have these ailments and these problems, because they were lame, blind, and halt. We can't always see the problems and the situations that are in our church family. and around our church family. In verse 4, "For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in, was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there, which had an infirmity 38 years." 38 years with the same infirmity will wear on you. It will wear you down. And that's the state that this man was in. But he had a plan. He had a plan for his own healing. He said, "I'm going to be here, and when the water stirred, I'm going to make it to the water." That was his plan. Verse 6, "When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he'd been there for a long time, in that case he said to him, wilt thou be made whole?" Jesus walks up to this man and says, would you like to be made whole? I find it interesting that Jesus asked him first. He could have, what's the obvious answer? The obvious answer is, of course he wants to be made whole. Nobody wants to be sick or lame or in darkness or lost. Why would anybody choose that? Well, people choose that all the time. And Jesus has never forced his power on anyone. Not even this man. The man had to say something. He had to acknowledge. He had to say yes. And that's where we are. If we don't acknowledge and say, "Yes, I will accept you, Christ. I will accept your power. I will accept your blood on my life. I will accept the sacrifice that was given." If we don't say that, if we're not drawn to that and we don't say that, he's not just going to force it on us. Why would anyone say no? Why would this man say no? People say no all the time, Sunday after Sunday, and walk away from a healing power that's right there available to them. So in verse 7, the impotent man answered him, "Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me in the pool. But while I am coming, another step down before me." He said, "I've tried and tried, and I just can't make it. I can't do it." And he'd been sick there for 38 years. I wonder how many cycles of the troubling of the pool that he'd been in. And it wasn't working for him. And yet he was still there because that was his plan. That was his plan to get well. Sometimes we've got a plan to make things better, and we try the same thing over and over, and it doesn't work. And for some reason, we get stuck in that cycle of over and over, and that's where we stay. Y'all have all heard the definition of insanity, right? Trying the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? That's where we stick ourselves a lot of times. We should all be ready to accept help. And that's harder for some than others. It's hard for some people to accept help. I'm one of those. It's just hard. It's just the way it is. But we should all be ready to accept help. But some of us also struggle with accepting responsibility. In other words, every time there's something wrong, it must be somebody else's fault. If something happened, then it's because I'm a victim, or it was done to me, not because of anything, any decision that I could have made. We have to be careful with that, And in a situation of sickness, and I don't claim to have a lot of knowledge about this, but I'll tell you the lady that sits back here that stood up the other Sunday morning, the way she started her testimony has just played over and over and over in my mind this week. And I'll see if you guys remember if you were here Sunday. She stood up and said, "Some of y'all know I've been a little under the weather, fighting cancer." Now, a little under the weather, fighting cancer, those things don't go together for most of us. But it was obvious as she continued her testimony that God had given her a grace and a peace in the middle of the battle she was fighting, that I'm sure she's worried. I don't want to, say that, but she had a peace around it, and she was letting God fight that battle for her. Some of us, if you ask us, how you doing? There's a 30-minute discussion coming of all the pills, all the aches, the car broke down, the situation, I dropped my dollar. I mean, sometimes it's that. There's a victim and there's a victor. There's a victim and there's a victor. And you know, the difference between those two is, are we trusting God to fight our battles for us? Are we understanding that we've got a God that has? We've got a God that heals to make the situation for us? And again, any one of us can be the victim or the victor at any given time. I get on my pity parties and I get sad about things. I do. I mean, I'll get there. But I'm impressed when I see somebody who's not. And I see a victor living in a yoke and understanding the direction the steps are supposed to go and living in that peace. So how many times had this man gone through this cycle? Well, Jesus asked him and said, "Do you want healing?" He answered, "Yes." And in verse 8, Jesus said unto him, "Rise, take thy bed and walk." And immediately, after 38 years, immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. So Jesus chose his own method of healing. Brother Ken taught a message the other Sunday that stayed with me about the man who had to go wash and had to go wash in the dirty river. And everything was great in his life. Was it Naaman? Naaman. So it was Naaman. He had to go wash in the river, and he was a powerful man and a mighty man, but he didn't get to choose his method of healing. He had leprosy, and that was the one thing wrong with him. And in order for him to get healing for that leprosy, I believe the way you said it, Brother Kenneth, he had to overcome his pride, and he had to go do what somebody else said. He had to go do what Jesus said, and he had to go get that healing the way Jesus said to get it. Well, Jesus chose his way of healing this man, and instead of telling him to go wash or spitting in the mud and rubbing in his eyes or having the man touch the hem of his garment, Jesus can heal in a multitude of ways, and he can do it. It's his way for his time, for his purpose, for that person. For this person, he said, "Stand up. Gather up your stuff. Gather up your bed and walk." So, just as Jesus chose his king with David, he chose his method of healing for this man. I'm convinced more and more the older I get that there is a hand. There is a hand out there guiding us in our lives and making way for us. So there's a hand that has, there's a hand that heals, and there's a hand that holds. This hand that holds, is a nail-pierced hand. The world is reaching. The world is grasping. The world is climbing. The world is fighting. I'm caught up in a bunch of that. And no matter whether you get another rung on the ladder, whether you get another floor up, whether you get a nicer office or a nicer position, I haven't met anybody yet. I was talking to a gentleman in the church the other day that's now a vice president. It doesn't matter what position you get. When you get there, it's not what you thought it was going to be, and there's emptiness associated with it. It's just the way it is. It doesn't matter if you think that truck is the truck that's going to make you happy. It'll be 6 weeks, and you'll ding it, and it won't be as good as you thought it was going to be. It'll get a chip in the paint, and it'll just be like... Okay. Do you know that I'm looking at a perfectly smooth surface? Well, it's not that smooth. I'm looking at somebody's been beating on this thing or something. Perfectly smooth surface right here where Brother Ken doesn't beat on it. If I were to take a microscope and really zoom in on that, it'd be mountains. There's nothing man can offer. There's nothing man can make. There's nothing the world can offer that is going to be, it's going to meet our expectations and be perfect. if you want that dress or that purse, and that's gonna satisfy, it might be for one season, or if you're lucky, for a whole season, but it might be for a day or two. I was talking to one of my buddies the other day, and he's been going through a tough time this year, and he's doing pretty well for himself, and he literally said these words to me, and I just thought, wow. He spoke the truth, but this is what he said. He said, man, I'm really feeling down. I'm really frustrated. I'm stressed out. I'm tired. I'm going to go this weekend and buy me something. I said, what? Are you going to do what? He said, yeah, I'm going to buy me something. That always makes me feel better. People are honest. And it will. It'll work. It'll work for a minute. But no matter what we do, it's going to rot, it's going to rust, it's going to decay, it's going to go away, it's going to lose its shine, it's going to fall apart on us. Brother Tom Gillum, he talks about it. Years ago he said this, and I remember it from one of his messages. He said, we're all out there chasing soap bubbles. Y'all remember that? Anybody remember that? He said, soap bubbles. We're like little kids running around the world chasing soap bubbles. We just run and we jump and we reach. And as soon as we get our hand on it, it pops. Then we chase another one and it pops. It's always been this way. And it's not until we grasp that pierced hand, it's not until we get in God's hand, that we know that we've got something solid. Something that's holding us. I don't have peace in a lot of things, but I do have peace in my salvation. Didn't get it easy. Took me years to work out. Some of y'all got it and forgot it. That sounded like a commercial. Some of y'all were good. It took me years to work through and find that peace. And I'll just say, if you're in that situation, work it out. You can ask Brother Lee, you can ask Brother Ken, you can ask Brother Mike, you can ask me, and we can give you all the words of encouragement, but until you work it out between you and God, that's where you're going to be. So, we have a hand that holds, and that's the only thing that we can grab onto in this world, and it'll last for eternity. We spend so much energy, I do too, on temporary things, temporal things. But it's the eternal things that God would have us put our attention on. And I've been thinking a lot about, I've been listening to some sermons in my car, and I'm hearing a lot of theme this week about just finding peace with and comfort with your heart toward God. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to articulate as well as I'm trying to settle it in my mind, but all the work that we do to make sure that we're doing all the right things is wasted energy until we've got ourselves settled that our hearts are right toward God and our intent is right toward going in God's direction. It's kind of like, I guess going back to that yoke, if we submit and we make our emotions and we make our commitments and we make the central focus of our life, making sure that we know what God wants for us, then all this other energy can just stop. It can just relax. And we can just start stepping alongside Christ in that yoke and get to where He would have us be. So that's all I have.